Hey guys, this is the Vertical Guidance Podcast.
I'm Wyatt Fink.
And I'm Alex Danger.
And we're interviewing pilots from around the industry about their flight training experiences. And our goal is to make getting into the aviation industry easier by offering advice to people that are right on the edge of beginning their aviation journey.
So let's get into it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. This week on the Vertical Guidance Podcast, we have Chatham on. He is a corporate pilot. Welcome on, Chatham.
Hey guys, it's great to be here.
So what are some of your different qualifications and stuff like that?
Oh, well, let's see. Ever since leaving UND, I've kind of got into corporate aviation after medicaling out of the Navy. I got hurt in the Navy, had a pilot slot in the Navy after graduating from UND, went off to OCS, got about 4 weeks in, hurt my lower back, lost my pilot slot, kind of had to go back to the drawing board. And I had an advisor at UND who told me, he said, well, you got a decision to make. You can either fly the buses or you can fly the Ferraris. And I guess the way he approached that kind of changed my mind. I was like, man, I don't want to fly buses. I want to fly Ferraris. So I decided, you know, corporate aviation is the way I'm going to go. And so here I am. I started off first job afterwards. I got hired on with WeatherMod, started flying with them in the King Air 90 on contract out in Pocatello, Idaho. And built some turbine time out there right out the bat. This was back in late 2017, early 2018. And this is in the middle of the pre-COVID years where pilots were a hot commodity and everything was going great. And I decided, you know, the contract flying wasn't really a thing for me. So then I moved into the side of the one to come back closer to home, get a full-time job in the South, back closer to family in South Carolina. So moved back to Charleston, South Carolina, and got a job flying for a holdings firm down there that had bought into the Hilton Hotel chain. So I flew a bunch of their executives around in a King Air 250 with the Fusion avionics in it, touchscreen avionics, pretty spiffy airplane. So went from the 90 to the 250 King Air, which is a really awesome airplane, and then flew for them for a little over a year and got offered an opportunity to come back to North Dakota, Western North Dakota, and fly for a corporate flight department out in Western North Dakota in Watford City, Badlands Aviation. They flew for a banking chain out there, and they had a CJ-4 Citation and a King Air 350. And I ended up getting SIC typed initially because I was still fairly lower time. SIC typed in both of those and flew the King Air 350 almost exclusively because of all my King Air time. And then eventually went to school, got type rated on the CJ-4 and flew the CJ-4 for about 120, 130 hours. And it got close to about 5 years old. So they sold it off and got a Citation Latitude. And I went to training on it, got trained on the Latitude, type rated on the Latitude, and only flew it for about, I think only have about actually 8 hours in the actual Latitude because COVID hit, things changed, ended up losing that job and had to go back to the drawing board. And so ended up coming back home and went corporate flying and went contract flying, I guess, back home, basing it out of South Carolina, and ended up having some connections up in Michigan and contracted on a Sovereign out of Michigan. So the Latitude and the Sovereign on the same type, and got about 15 to 20 hours in the Sovereign flying it, then got hired full time on out here in Idaho where I am now, flying a Citation Ultra on charter out in Idaho.
Wow. That's a long story. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So going back in your story, you said you went to the Navy first. So you got to that track and then had an injury and then came back to UND.
I did. I didn't actually come back as a student. I thought about it. I actually enrolled in, what course was it? I'm trying to remember. I tell you what it was. It was at the time, the UAS program had not been approved, I think, for the restricted ATP minutes. So I went into some courses that I needed two courses to basically be added to the transcript. And I think one of them was basically airline systems kind of management. I think it was an aviation system, airline system or something. I can't remember who taught it, but I enrolled in it and I was still kind of looking around and I had connections down in Fargo with the Fargo Jet Center. And I started working on my CFI down there. And that's actually where I ran into Jody Fisher, who at the time was the chief pilot for WeatherMod, and he was looking for King Air crew for WeatherMod to go out to Idaho. And I was like, man, that's way better than no offense, but teaching students. So I'm gonna jump on the turbine time like I get a chance. So, and I'll be honest, at that time in 2017, early 2018, even if you were low time and you had an opportunity like that, as soon as I got my first 100 hours of turbine, my career took off. I mean, it was nuts, you know, especially in the corporate realm, because corporate doesn't really, is not really governed by a minimum hour requirement. We're kind of governed by whatever insurance companies will let us, you know, whatever insurance companies say, how much experience that we need. So it just really took off from that point. And it was so desperate to find pilots at that point that I was lucky enough to shoot up the experience ladder really quick at a fairly low flight time, total time number. I probably had about 400 hours at the time. And, you know, to get the King Air experience and to fly a turboprop, that's obviously, you know, one of the more popular airplanes ever built, really kind of set my career on fire at that point.
So you're saying that there's like really no hour requirement for just insurance hour requirements. So you don't need 1,000 hours to start flying corporate.
No, not at all. To get into the market, no, you don't. I mean, corporate 91, you know, which is just privately owned aircraft or corporation owned aircraft, not flying on a charter certificate or anything. There really is no hour requirement. It really boils down to what insurance companies think is the best requirement. You know, for their flight crew and for their pilots. You know, we're starting to see with a lot of the accidents that have happened recently, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard about the Citation XLS that crashed a couple weeks ago up in Connecticut, things like that. There's been a lot of a rash of corporate incidents over the years that really kind of boiled down to, you know, guys doing some silly stuff through the bad training and things. That's really what has dictated the higher insurance minimums over time. Now, you're starting to see a lot of cases where, you know, single pilot aircraft like the CJ-4, which is a single pilot jet, the King Airs are all single pilot airplanes. You're starting to see a lot of corporate setups now where even though it's single pilot, they want a second pilot. The insurance won't insure anybody flying them single pilot. So that's a good way to kind of get your way into it, especially if you're able to get type rated and get trained. And I was lucky enough to do that. I went through formal training. Got some SIC type ratings, was able to log the SIC time in the right seat of these airplanes and fly them and build that experience and shoot up the ladder fairly quickly.
So do you ever find that like most insurance hours are closer to 1,000, or what was kind of like the insurance hours required for your first job? Were you able to just roll right into it with low hours kind of?
Well, WeatherMod kind of was unique because I think they've always just kind of they were kind of grandfathered into an older program with insurance companies where they kind of were allowed to, okay, well, this guy came from UND and we can vouch for that, because at the time WeatherMod was pretty much a UND flying club too. It was all WeatherMod. It was all former UND guys down there, and they could kind of had the authority to bring in who they thought would be a good fit for what they wanted to do. I probably got on at WeatherMod with about 300 hours, got about 100 hours with them up to 400 hours. And that was all turbine time. And turbine time, I can't stress enough, if you're able to log turbine time and actually log it, you know, legally, either as an SIC typed, you know, right seat guy, or, you know, as y'all know, as long as you're flying under in an aircraft that's under 12,500 pounds, you know, the King Air 250 and the 90 are in that realm. As long as you're just sole manipulator controls, you can log PIC time, which I was able to do as well. And to get that experience up front is what laid a huge pillar in the corporate world, because a lot of people will look at that and say, oh, he's already got the turbine experience. So I tell people all the time, if you're able to get turbine time early and you're able to get it at a good operation that will train, you know, the sky's the limit in the corporate world.
Okay, cool. So like the insurance minimums aside, how did you get connected with all these people? Because it sounds like you've had like so many different jobs and just all sorts of different experience.
It's a unique setup. I tell people corporate is a lot. You'll hear this a lot from a lot of corporate pilots, is it's about who you know. A lot of, I'd say about 60% of it's about who you know. Note, you'll laugh at this. Every corporate interview I've ever had, this is the truth with every company, they didn't ask me anything about flying, nothing. It's all about, is this guy attitude wise, is he a fit personality wise where we can fly with him consistently and go on 5, 6, 7 day trips if we have to, and be crammed in the cockpit of this plane with him all the time and not want to kill him, basically. And you laugh, but that's the honest to God truth. And I know if there's corporate pilots out there after this is over that will listen to this, they'll laugh and they'll say, yeah, that's exactly the truth. Nine times out of 10, your corporate interviews, they won't ask you anything about flying the airplane. They already assume, okay, well, you know how to fly. You went to UND. You have these degrees. You have, you know, these ratings. You're multi-engine. You're CFI. We know you know how to fly, but do you have the attitude to where you're not going to annoy us, or we're not going to want, you know, to hire somebody else here in the next year because we can't stand flying with you? That's really what it kind of comes down to. And I was lucky enough to have some connections back home in Charleston that led to the King Air 250 job. I was lucky enough to have a connection out in Western North Dakota that led to that job. UND kind of has helped me with two of the four jobs I've had so far. I can't stress enough laying out for all the students out there that want to go into corporate flying, develop your connections early and, you know, enjoy your classmates and the people you fly with and the instructors you fly with. I have one instructor, is a great friend of mine that actually was my private pilot instructor, and he's now a Gulfstream captain on 650s and 550s down in Atlanta, flying for one of the bigger flight departments in the country. And he's pretty much got a dream job. And he's told me, he said, you know, if you're able to move up the ladder and get a little bit of international experience, you can easily get hired down here. He said, I'm assistant chief pilot. I can walk your resume in. And that's really how you get hired in the corporate world, is through connections.
So like for networking, like how do you maintain a connection? And so like if you just want to randomly hit someone up and be like, hey, you have a job for me? Like, so that way it doesn't actually sound like that.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because sometimes I think if you know the person well enough and you're good enough friends with them, it can be that simple. As oddly as it can be. Most of the time I've always just been one of these guys that I've developed connections to people that I was friends with, that people that I trusted, that I thought were great professional colleagues that I've flown with, and who can vouch for my flying, that have flown with me or I've flown with them, and develop those connections and stay in touch with them. Text them and you know, a lot of my connections have just been most of the time texting or calling them to see how they're doing. Here and there, or periodically, and hardly ever talk anything about aviation. Maybe cover, you know, some cool trips they've been on or something like that, but then talk about their family or talk about how things are going on in their life, and they'll ask me the same, and it just kind of develops that connection. And then once you kind of develop that bond, it sticks with them. And when jobs pop up, you know, they think about you. I mean, my buddy in Atlanta was that way. He's been that way numerous times. I developed a connection at Flight Safety. I was actually in training on the Latitude in Wichita, back in the middle of the pandemic. Oddly enough, we were the only two people in the Latitude training program in April of 2020 during a lockdown. So we spent 3.5 weeks in Wichita and had to have everything Uber Eats sent to our hotel because it couldn't go anywhere. But we developed a good connection. He was the director of aviation, or if not was, he still is, the director of aviation for the Koch Brothers organization, which is a huge industry. And they had bought four or five Latitudes that they were based in Atlanta, because Koch had purchased Georgia Pacific, which was a company that they had purchased down there, and they wanted to replace their aging fleet. And since he was a director of aviation, he said, well, you know, I'm typed in our Challengers and our Lears, but I want to get typed in the Latitude. So he went to training on that, and we happened to be there at the same time. And now he's a really good friend of mine. We talk every other week, just about. So, and there's another connection I have, and he's told me point blank, you know, we went through the whole initial together on the Latitude, and, you know, got out of the sim, and he handed me his business card, turned it over, wrote cell phone in the back, and said, hey, you're a great pilot. Give me a call when you get about 2,500 hours. We'd love to hire you at Koch. I mean, it's that simple.
Jeez, that's crazy. So it seems like a lot with corporate is who you know. How do you build different skills to like be able to interact and build connections like this? Because let's just say like I'm like a new student. How do I like put my foot in the door and find out about these different corporate opportunities?
Well, I think a lot of it is building your connections with the alumni too. I think getting out there, you know, you guys can spread names around and people that you talk to. The word of mouth is a dangerous combination in the business world. And not only will corporate pilot you that, but the CEOs, the executives that we fly around, the one percenters, as I like to call them, they'll tell you the exact same thing. They'll tell you that a lot of them got to where they're going because of their contacts, their connections, and their ability to communicate with people. biggest thing I can suggest is just don't be shy. I mean, it's your career. You got to take charge of it. Nobody's going to give it to you. You got to go out there and go look for it. And if it's something you want to pursue, you want to fly the quote unquote Ferraris and not fly the buses, you got to go out there and make the connections and talk to people and feel your way through it. And I'll be honest, that's been part of the fun process for me, is talking to these people. You know, I think it's really kind of the big thing is to take advantage of it in your flight courses, like as CFIs that are there, that are looking for the next step. If you're interested in corporate flying, I suggest when you go in the FBOs and you see guys like NetJet guys on the ramp, or you see a corporation, or you see these guys walking in, talk to them, you know, fill them up. I mean, these guys will talk to you. They've been there. I mean, they know. 9 times out of 10, that's how I am. I walk into FBOs and I'm always talking to pilots. You know, I've been lucky enough to fly in massive situations. I was in, I flew a charter trip with the current company I had a couple months ago. I was down at Texas and we flew into Fort Worth on the night of the NASCAR All-Star race. And they had all these, you know, all these race team flight departments, and they're like literally Air Force level jets out there. And I'm talking to Penske Racing. I'm talking to, Rick Hendrick's Motorsports, you know, Chip Ganassi Racing. You talk to all these guys, they'll talk you up. I mean, they know you're a pilot, so they want to talk about the same things. And did the same thing in Indianapolis. I flew a couple weeks ago, flew in for the Indianapolis 500. Same thing. Take advantage. Talk to the guys on the ramp and get to know these people.
So with that, like connecting with people, how would you best approach someone on a ramp? It can always be like kind of frightening first, like to go like, hey, nice airplane. Or like, what do you do to get into that?
You nailed it. You nailed it. I know it sounds stupid, but how many conversations have I started with pilots by walking down the ramp, getting out of an Ultra, getting out of a King Air, and you see a 650 and you're like, man, that's a sweet 650. Who you fly for? You know, it's that simple. You know, they love that kind of stuff. Let's be honest, guys. We're all pilots. Pilots have egos. So if you can feed the other pilots egos, they're going to love it. So that's a great way to get into the door.
So what's kind of like your dream job in a corporate flight department?
My dream job is to eventually get to the Gulf Streams. Corporate world, you know, the airline guys are always dreaming to get to, you know, the 747, the 777, you know, the wide body stuff. In the corporate world, I would say the dream is to get to the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream, probably arguably the Globals, they are the two that are kind of the 747, 777 of the corporate market. That's pretty much the top of the ladder. That's where the highest pay is. That's where normally your best schedules are, your best benefits. It's normally in those levels. I mean, the nice thing about corporate is that it could be on any level. I've seen small little mom and pop companies that have one pilot or two pilots flying a King Air 250, kind of like what I was part of. And that was a great operation, had great ownership, great pay, great benefits. Wasn't really flying as much as I would like to at that point in my career. But if I was 65 years old and I was ready to retire, that's my retirement gig right there. Come back to Charleston, live in Charleston, fly about 150 hours a year in a brand new 250. Man, you can't ask for anything better than that. But my dream job ultimately would be to get to the Gulf Streams. That's kind of what I'm aiming for, you know, either in a 91 flight department or a very large charter operation.
So I know I talked to a professor about corporate, and he was saying how some corporate jobs, some of them can be insanely difficult, and then some can be like the best job you can have in aviation. How do you like filter out the different ones to find the best job?
Well, you got to ask the questions. I mean, that's the big thing. Pilots will normally not hide from those questions. Like if you're talking to guys, you know, and I'm just throwing things out there, flight departments, you know, it's a small flight department from small company in like Indianapolis. So you're on the FBO and you see they have a CJ4 and you walk up to the guy and you talk about the plane and he's happy. But then you say, well, tell me about your company. And he starts getting quiet. That might be a sign of, okay, well, it might not be the best job in the world. And this guy's looking to get out. You know, and I think that's the big thing. You're looking for, of course, like what we're trained at UND, that industry standard, you know, who's following as closely to that industry standard. I can't stress enough. The big thing in corporate is pushing proper training. I mean, somebody will send you the flight safety, send you the CAE, get you that simulator level training of experience. You cannot do what we do in simulators. You can't do it in the real plane and live to tell about it. I mean, it's just a dangerous thing to even even remotely consider doing it in the real plane. And so I'm a huge proponent of that. That's one thing I think that if you're going into the corporate world, you need to try to find the flight departments to devote to that. And the vast majority, I'd say 90% of them, they do. Even some of those smaller mom and pop shop flight departments, they're starting to get into it too, because insurance companies are really coming down saying, we're not going to insure your plane unless your pilots go to CAE or flight safety.
Okay. So you're in corporate right now. What made you not want to do like the traditional path of going to like mainline, like airlines? What made you like think corporate?
You know, I'll backtrack here. Ever since I was 6 years old, my grandfather took me to go see the Blue Angels at the Charleston Air Show. And it resonated with me. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. My grandfather was Navy, and my whole, from that point forward, all I wanted to do was be a naval aviator. Wings of gold, land on the back of a ship, fly the F-18. That was the goal. And everything I did in my life, I've always been a very goal-oriented, very driven, motivated guy. Everything came down to that. All my decisions in my life were like, what's going to get me there the quickest? What's the best way to get there? I was an Eagle, four-palm Eagle Scout at 14 years old. Growing up, I was a lieutenant colonel in Civil Air Patrol. Wow. You know, those were the steps to get me to where I wanted to go. I applied at the Naval Academy, happened to be in 2011. It was the middle of the giant sequester, and the military was getting cut. And I got a nomination to go from Senator Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina to go to the Naval Academy. And what at the time I thought was like the biggest quote unquote failure of my life was not being able to get accepted to the Naval Academy. Ended up being like the greatest gift that was ever handed to me, because the very next week I got accepted to UND, and I ended up going, traveling up there to tour it with my parents. And I remember thinking, what Naval Academy? This is where I need to be. And I ended up going to UND and going through the aviation program and deciding really in a roundabout way, as I found out later, the Naval Academy wasn't the way to become a Navy pilot anymore. That was a traditional way. The best way now is to go somewhere like UND or Embry-Riddle or Oklahoma, Auburn, Purdue, and go Navy OCS. That was the way to go. I mean, I had a lot of buddies of mine that I knew that went Navy OCS out of UND for Navy. I knew several that went Marine Corps OCS and are flying in the Marines as well. So that was kind of my ultimate goal. But I never, for some reason, I never was really attracted to the passenger airline market. That just was something that never really clicked with me. I can't really describe necessarily what it was. I think maybe my attraction from the very beginning to the military was defending my country, service. But as far as airplanes concerned, the whole, you know, going supersonic was a big thing. I'm kind of a speed junkie. And I know the airlines, you know, are faster than your 172, but they're not outrunning your Gulfstreams, your Globals, your Challengers out there. And I realized when I lost the Navy, if I was going to have, for lack of a better term, the best of both worlds without flying a supersonic jet, but still have the luxury, the speed, and for lack of another better term, the sexiness of flying something like a corporate jet, corporate was going to give me that, and the airlines weren't. And that was just something that really resonated with me. That was something I wanted to do.
So it sounds like you got the Ferraris in the end, which is good.
Yeah, I did. I got the Ferraris, and I didn't have to pay for them. That's the best thing.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah,
it's better to have friends with the stuff you want than own the stuff you
want. That's right. That's right. Exactly. You're exactly right. And you know what is Garth Brooks always say? You know, we got friends in low places. You know, that's kind of what it boils down to. But I mean, I'll be honest. You know, the Ferrari concept is really true to me. I mean, these jets are amazing. I've been lucky enough to be type rated, getting ready to get a fifth type rated, fourth one in a jet. I've covered the vast majority of the citations. I've flown all of them except the Mustang. I've flown, haven't flown the 10 yet, which would be an awesome one to fly. And I hadn't flown the Longitude, but everything in between there, the Sovereign, the Latitude, the CJ4, and the 500 series Ultra I've covered. You know, those type ratings are, you know, invaluable in a lot of ways. And I was lucky enough to be at the right place, right time, get that training and be in a position where I can kind of guide my career through the corporate market.
I think that's really interesting that you're flying all these different types of planes. Like in the airlines, it seems like you kind of have wide bodies.
Yeah.
You have narrow bodies, but you get to fly all sorts of different stuff. I think that's pretty cool. Definitely an advantage of the corporate world.
It is. It is. I mean, it's not corporate is kind of cool. Like, I mean, I think it's neat that I can say I came up through the King Airs, and I was lucky enough to fly all three models of the King Air and, you know, get a feel for them. I'd have to look, but I think I'm just shy of 750 hours, 800 hours of turboprop time, somewhere in there. And those were all between the 350, the 250, the 200, the 90, the E90, the C90 Alpha. So I've flown a lot of different King Airs. Got a chance to do that. I highly suggest it. You know, I'm sure it might be a question later on. Y'all were probably planning on asking, but if you were to ask me what my favorite airplane out of the group I've flown, you know, throwing away the speed concept as far as just a pilot's airplane to fly, you can't beat the King Air.
So when you were going back, you said you didn't get accepted into like Navy school. How, like, I know, like, as me, I'd probably be like insanely defeated. I bet you were insanely defeated. Look, like, continue to yourself to drive and like continue on.
Well, that's a really good question. I I had to do some soul searching. I'm gonna be honest with you. you know, the Naval Academy thing was kind of temporary because, like I said, it was a week. And then once I got to UND, I saw that and I was like, all right, cool. You know, no big deal. I'll go Navy OCS. We'll make this work. The biggest defeat I think I've ever faced in my life was when I got hurt and I realized, you know, literally 3 weeks before that, I heard the guy say, yeah, you're a perfect candidate. You're 5'8", you're stocky. They're going to put you in the fighter jets. You're cleared for the Hornet. And my exit class of OCS guys were mostly Super Hornet, but they were the first group of guys that got selected for the F-35 at the time. And I was cleared for that. And to be able to describe the emotion of walking out of those 3 days of medical testing, thinking that they've tested you enough to send you into space, and then to say that and not find anything was just triumphant. You know, to say that, you know, several years ago you were 6 years old watching the Blue Angels fly, and now you got a chance to do it. But then 3 weeks later, it got ripped away from me. That one took a lot of soul searching. I won't lie. When I got back home and I got my medical all squared away and everything, I actually talked to my parents a lot. I leaned on my family and I said, you know, there was part of me in the beginning that said, well, if I can't have this, I don't want to fly anymore. And I started doing some soul searching. I was like, all right, let's be real, Chad. I mean, you really believe that? I mean, I don't think you're a cubicle type guy. So I think you need to try to figure out some airplane that's going to fill the void. And, I leaned back on that comment that, my advisor said. I mean, he said Ferraris or buses, and I was like, well, you know, can't fly a fighter jet, I'll fly a Ferrari. and I just kind of have leaned on that concept and said, you know, okay, it won't go supersonic and it won't fire missiles and drop bombs, but it's the best looking jets in the sky. So I can't ask for much more than that.
That's pretty wild.
Is some massive adversity that you totally have overcome. I think that's really cool. Like, that is a huge story. I think that people can definitely take, that's just really good advice that you're going to get adversity, adversity in your career, and you just got to take it and run with it. And I think that's really cool. You totally, totally overcame it.
Well, I appreciate that. And you're exactly right. I mean, I think that's the big thing I got to stress to, you know, the students and the people that are listening to your podcast, is that my way in my career has been very unorthodoxed. I also did this, like I told Alex earlier, and I said, you know, I started in commercial aviation, but 2 years in, thinking more military and wanting to make the military career, I thought UAS was a better option. So I switched to UAS and graduated with a UAS degree. Oddly enough, I haven't touched a UAS since I left UND. I hadn't even been anywhere near them. And if somebody walked up to me today and said, hey, you got a UAS degree, you think you can come fly with Northrop Grumman? I'd say, heck no, I know nothing about those things. So it's funny where life takes you. A big thing I can stress to your listeners and the students is don't hang everything with your future on the degree that you walk out of college with. Listen to your professors, listen to your instructors, take every opportunity you can to find where you want to go and where your niche is, and enjoy your studies and honestly get a degree in what you want to get a degree in. If commercial's not what you want, but you want to stay in aviation, do airport management, do aviation safety. I did the aviation safety specialization. I have a real passion for aviation safety. I've told people if I ever lost my medical, my new dream job after I got over that point would be probably to go work for the NTSB and be an accident investigator. I think that'd be an awesome job. And I think the aviation safety background with the expertise that we have at UND, you could easily get in on a program like that if that's something that you want to consider. But having backup plans is always a smart idea, but just follow your passion and do what you love. There's going to be hitches in the road along the way, but just don't give up.
I couldn't agree more with that whole thing. I think to touch back on the adversity, I always hear about people, they like unsat like a check ride, like a certificate grant check ride. They're like, no one's going to hire me. So I think like one of the things to make clear is that as long as you like learn and get over that adversity, like they see that and they like see what you've learned that situation. They're not going to kick you to the side because you didn't know you're 100 feet off your steep turn back in 2014. So that's just my whole thought with it. And it's like really cool hearing yours. Yours is definitely a lot more adversity than failing a check ride, but it's just really cool to hear that you can get over really most humps in aviation.
Right. And like I said, I was able to get to where I am with even out a CFI rating. I think that also says a lot. I mean, the traditional way that's really kind of ingrained in your head, and I'm guilty of this, but at UND, when I lost my medical, when I didn't lose my medical, when I lost my Navy pilot slot, that was the first thing I said to my parents. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have my CFI. I've got like 300 hours, 280 hours. What am I going to do? I'm screwed, you know, lack for a better term. I think getting out there, I didn't give up. That was one thing. I hit the internet and I pound the pavement and I started, all right, well, this is what I've done now. I've gone back. Let's go work on the CFI. Well, I started working on CFI and then things just fell into place. I mean, the weather mod fell out there. Some people would argue, oh my gosh, you didn't finish your CFI. You should have never taken that job. I completely disagree. I mean, look at where I am now. It's funny, you guys, I've actually had two opportunities to finish my CFI at two different 141 flight schools. And I got down to the check ride on both and got offered big jobs and left and never even finished it up. So I've done all this without the CFI rating. I guess I wouldn't suggest to a UND student that be your number one way to go about it. But I would say that if it's something you don't want to do and it's something you're not interested in, I guess I'm kind of an exception to the rule. I was able to make it work without it.
So I think that a lot of like just something we were just talking about, a lot of UND students don't really realize how massive the aviation industry is. So like, I mean, I'm personally on the track, you know, like I'm a CFI right now, just building hours to get to the airlines. I'm stuck in the loop, but you're living proof that there's just so much more out there. I mean, we've hit on like the NTSB flight safety. You can do so much with even just an aviation degree. And even if you don't have an aviation degree and you want to get your hours, you can do that too. But yeah, I just think that you're living proof that you can do so much in the industry.
Yeah, I think so too, in a lot of ways. I mean, myself and a lot of others, I think a lot of the corporate guys are kind of living proof of that in a lot of ways. I mean, being able to fly multiple different airplanes, like you talked about earlier, is a huge advantage. Getting to train on, you know, multiple different jets, multiple different turboprops, and to have that unique experience. I think too, one of the biggest things I love about corporate is it's not one dimensional flying into only major airports or semi-major airports like the airlines do consistently, only the ones that have airline coverage. To give you a sense, I mean, my last 7 days on before I took some time off to come back to South Carolina and see some family where I am now. My last 7 days on, I'll give you an extent. I flew every single day in the Ultra. We left Idaho. We went to Orange County, California. Picked some people up, went to Boeing Field in Seattle, then went down to North Bend, Oregon, spent the night in North Bend, left the next morning, went back to Boeing Field and flew somebody from Boeing Field in Seattle. Y'all, depending on if y'all are from Minnesota or not, you might recognize this, but we flew them to the tiny little town of Fairmount. I think I'm saying that right. I'm probably going to get butchered by some Minnesota.
Yeah, Fairmount.
Fairmount, Minnesota. That's where I flew into. I took the Ultra from Boeing Field in Seattle to Fairmount, Minnesota, and dropped these two people off in such a small airport after hours. FBO's closed, and I kid you not, we had to taxi the Ultra up and actually fuel it wing to wing with jet fuel. And that's a first in my corporate career. That was kind of a laughing thing to look back at. And somebody said, well, I've never fueled my jet up before. Well, I have. I fueled mine up in Fairmont, Minnesota. So we left Fairmont after we fueled it up, had to overnight in Rapid City, and then the next morning went back to Boeing Field and went back to our home base in Idaho. So that's kind of my last 7 days. You know, 2 weeks before that, I was doing some LAX hops. So I actually took the Ultra into LAX, picked some people up. It's kind of a rush being in a small business jet or a semi, you know, size business jet, and you're playing with the big boys flying in during rush hour at LAX. I mean, that's kind of a unique experience where they're telling you to keep your speed up, keep your speed up. You know, you're in trail of a 747 and you got a 777 breathing down your neck. So I think that's a unique experience to corporate. I've been into a lot of Bravo airports, too many now to name. Actually, to be honest, I've lost track of how many of them I've been to, but I've been to so many small towns too. Like, you know, when I flew for the bank in Western North Dakota, we took the 350 into Harvey. We took it into Rugby. We took it into the tiniest was Staples, Minnesota, which I believe is a 3,200-foot strip. And that's just a blast. Oof. Taking a King Air 350 into a 3,200. And I'll tell you this, it has that 350 has better short field performance than your 172 in a lot of ways. That thing is an amazing airplane to fly. And that's, people said, well, what do you like about the King Air so much? I said, it's short field capability. You can take those things anywhere. It's the Jeep Grand Cherokee of the sky. I mean, it's basically what it is. And so we went in the Staples with it, went in the Washburn, North Dakota. You probably don't even know where Washburn is. Most people probably don't.
I've heard of it, but
yeah, a little tiny town. I can't remember the identifier. It's like 3 Yankee Foxtrot or something. I can't remember, but it's just north. It's like right in between Bismarck and Minot. I took it into there twice, carrying the CEO in for a day to do a golf tournament. So, you know, that's the kind of job that you're experiencing in a day-to-day life of a corporate pilot. You know, one minute you'll wake up and your schedule says you're going to take somebody into Minneapolis, St. Paul to catch an international flight. And next day you wake up and you're flying into Belfouche, South Dakota, or you're going into Harvey, North Dakota. So it's a very multidimensional career.
Yeah, you're definitely not taking the Boeing 777 into any of those small North Dakota ones. But more on like corporate stuff. So what's like your day-to-day like operation with that? So I know most corporate jobs, you don't have like a dispatcher or anything else like that. So like showing up to the airport, like what do you have to go through to get the flight rolling?
Oh, well, it's different. Like part 91 is when I flew for the bank, we had kind of a central scheduler. And we kind of had our schedules set out for the most part a month in advance, at the least 2 weeks in advance. They were a pretty good company, actually. They technically, we were on call, but I think in that year and 10 months I was with them, I think I only actually got called out on like an on-call, last minute call to fly like maybe once. And most corporate operations are kind of like that for the most part. There are some that aren't. There are some that like when you're on call, you could be laying in bed and you get a call and say, hey, be at the airport in 30 minutes. You know, we got to go here. But those are, I think for the most part, at least in my experience so far, have been pretty far and in between. I think about how many times I've had that. Probably I can count on one hand, maybe 4 or 5 times I've had to do it over my career so far. But day to day, I mean, you know, you have your schedule normally with the schedule like I did with the bank. I'll give you the best sense from part 91 perspective when I was flying that. I'm now 135, but when you're flying part 91, we had a central scheduler. She kind of put everything together with the CEO's plans and the business executive's plans with the bank. And we'd have that a month in advance to 2 weeks in advance at the shortest. And we'd have our crews laid out. We'd have 4 pilots in our group. And, you know, we had our primary King Air guys. We had our primary jet guys. I ended up being kind of a pseudo guy. I ended up starting with the King Air because that's what my experience was. But I ended up bouncing over to the CJ4 and then eventually to the Latitude as well. But, you know, we kind of rotated in between and depending on what the trips were and where they needed people and what our personal schedules were, they kind of just figured out where we would go. a little bit of flexibility that has to be in there. I mean, I would say with some flight departments, you certainly want to be flexible. But it's not as probably not as set in stone with some of them as it is with the airlines. I would say that might be where the airlines might have a little bit more of an advantage. Your bigger flight departments that do have dispatches, like your Fortune 500 companies, they're just like flying for an airline for the most part. You've got basically, you just show up and you fly. That's basically the setup with those. But with the companies I've flown with, you know, we showed up, we'd look at the weather, we'd look at our flight plan, we'd file our flight plans. We'd look back over the weather along the route. We'd make our decisions, kind of talk about what we would feel was our concerns and things like that. And then we'd wait for our passengers, make sure we have our ice, coffee, papers on board for them, make sure that the plane's nice and clean. They show up, we load their bags, we get in the plane, we take off and we fly, and we get there and we sit and wait. It's kind of the hurry up and wait mentality. I mean, I've sat and waited 45 minutes at an FBO, turn around and left. I've had some quick turns, and there's been some times where they said, oh, we're going to be quick, we're only going to be an hour, and we end up sitting there for 6 hours. So it's you have to be flexible. I you know, some people say that's a negative. I think that's a uniqueness to it. Gives you a heck of a lot of time to connect with people while you're sitting in the FBO and develop connections, like I was talking about earlier.
So it seems like the stereotype of corporate flying is just like, kind of like you said, you're laying in bed at, I don't know, 7 a.m. or something. I guess I don't like getting up at 7 a.m. So that's early for me. And you get a call from the boss and he's like, I got to leave to go to a business meeting in an hour. And then you wait for 3 days and he doesn't show up. So like, that doesn't really happen.
That's right? Not like, it. I can tell you right now, I've been flying corporate for almost 5 years, coming up on 5 years, and I have never experienced that.
That's good
news.
I'm
not saying it won't happen. I'm going to jinx it for somebody who's listening. They're going to say, I'm going to be a corporate pilot, and the first job they have, very first flight, is going to be like that. I'm going to probably jinx it. But I'll be honest, in my experience, it's very rare to ever see that. I haven't seen that.
So you're obviously flying some of the higher end, like customers around. Do you ever get to have like cool experiences with them if you ever fly in somewhere, or go into like cool areas?
We have. I mean, I've gone to a lot of luxurious places. I've been to Monterey, California. That's a beautiful place. I've been to San Diego's a nice city. I've done a lot of cool places in the United States. Used to go to the Caribbean quite a bit. We hit the Bahamas, Grand Cayman quite a bit in my past job in Charleston. To go down there quite a bit. That was always a unique experience. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite cities I've been to. You know, Boston's one of my favorite cities I used to go to quite frequently. Dallas, Texas is always fun. Scottsdale, Arizona. We used to fly to Scottsdale a lot. Scottsdale and the Phoenix metro area around Scottsdale is a wonderful place to go. A lot of fun things to do down there. I'm a big pro sports fan and college sports fan. So My thing is, and one thing I love about corporate too, is, you know, oh, we got a 3-day trip. Well, once we get them and get them off the plane, we're done. So we're free to do whatever we want. We'll get our rental car. We'll get our hotels, check into the hotel. And my first thing after I normally get something to eat and sit down and get checked into the hotel, I pull out my iPad, pull up my game time app, say, all right, who's playing close by that I can go see? I've been to so many sporting events. I'm a big baseball fan. So I'm always, if I'm in baseball season, I'm hitting baseball parks as I go. That's kind of my thing. And that is the life of a corporate pilot in a lot of ways. I mean, if it's not sports that you're into, that's fine. I mean, it's museums. I another thing I do is I hit air museums that I like to see and things like that. I mean, I think that's an advantage to it. As far as unique people, I've flown Nikki Sixx, who's one of the founders of Motley Crue, the rock band. Flew them around. Very, very nice guy. I've flown Saquon Barkley, running back for the New York Giants. Really, really good guy. It's amazing who you run into along the way. I flew Josh Duhamel, you know, the actor from North Dakota that was in all the Transformer movies. Flew him around. So it's been cool. I've flown some politicians. You know, you get the unique aspect of flying the quote unquote one percenters around, and it's pretty cool.
That is so cool. That was some really cool people. So that's kind of like a pro to corporate flying. What are some like different pros and cons? Because obviously everything, even if you have the best job in the world, there's also cons with it too.
Oh yeah, there's always cons to it. You know, sometimes because you have a limited number of pilots, you don't have the luxury of being at like a massive airline where you have like 8,000 pilots to go through. You know, there's times sometimes where you might schedule something and they might change the schedule, and all of a sudden now you have to fly this flight and you have to change something up. I would, and you might not be able to commit to it. Like if you wanted, you told your girlfriend we were going to go on a weekend trip and then they change things up and say, sorry, honey, I can't do that. I got to fly to Scottsdale, and she gets mad because you're going to Scottsdale without her. You know, that kind of stuff. I think that's kind of one of the major cons of it. You know, another one is for some people call this a con. I think as I get older, it'll probably be more of a con to me. Right now, it doesn't bother me as much, but that hurry up and wait concept. I mean, airline guys, unless you're delayed, you're not sitting around waiting a whole lot. It's pretty quick. You move through your day fairly quickly, I think, unless you're dealing with maintenance or weather delays. One way or another, the clock's ticking on you guys. So y'all have, you know, very strict, you know, rest requirements and things. And we have that in 135 now too, but in 91, we don't. It's really pretty much on the pilot's shoulders and how he feels. So you're kind of stuck in a situation where, you know, like I said, you know, I've sat at airports for 30 minutes. I've literally landed, kicked them out, turn around and left. But I've also had moments where they say, oh, yeah, our meeting's only going to be 2 hours, guys. We'll turn around. We'll be home before dinner. And next thing you know, you're sitting there at 9 at night waiting to go home. So that's a con, I think, in some regards. It gets kind of aggravating when everybody's gone home, the FBO's closed, you're sitting in the lounge in the back, you're the only two people there. And, you know, if you're not in a big city, like if you're out in, gosh, I don't know, like Rugby, North Dakota.
Yeah, anywhere in North Dakota.
It's time to go home. Yeah, it's time to go home. Now, I will say, for perspective, I've never had to do that in a small airport in North Dakota or anything like that. But it's there. That risk of that is always there.
So what would be your greatest love of corporation then? Corporate flying?
Oh, man. I think the uniqueness in the destinations, the uniqueness in the aircraft that I fly, it's a multitude of things, and the uniqueness in the people we fly. I think that's one of the greatest things. And being able to actually connect with your people that you're flying. You know, airline pilots, I don't think really connect with the people you're flying. You don't really know who's in the back. We have the glory of, you know, we fly a lot of times, we fly a lot of the same people. You develop a connection with them, you know, and you develop a camaraderie, and it's pretty cool. I mean, it's really neat when you're out in the charter market, like I have been, so far for the most of this year. You know, you get to fly unique people. You're flying movie stars, you're flying athletes, you're flying, you know, band members of big bands like Motley Crue and stuff. So it's pretty cool. It's a unique experience there. I think that's probably my greatest love of it is the locations and the people.
Cool. So like during the pandemic or during coronavirus, did you see that there was a big uptick in the corporate flying?
We have. I will tell you this. So Corona hit, I guess, when did the lockdown start going? About mid-March of 2020?
Yeah, like March or something.
Yeah, so about mid-March to about the 1st of May, everybody in aviation, including corporate, was kind of like, all right, what are we doing? You know, it's kind of everybody hit the pause button, and it was a hard pause. And it was like, I don't know what's going to happen. Everybody would kind of had this scared look on their face. Like, I don't know what this is going to do to our career. I will tell you this, about mid to late May, it was probably about the time where your bigger charter companies, your Wheels Up, your XO, your NetJets, and your corporate 91 bigger flight departments and your charter industry just took off. And I think it got to the point where these people that are the big money people, you know, they're sitting around and they're thinking, you know, we can't work this way. We've got flight departments. We're not going to depend on the airlines in the first class cabin to get me to where I'm going to go. I'm going to charter jets and we're going to do it that way. And Corona's not going to stop us. We'll do it. It'll be better. The best way to social distance is to fly in your Ferrari. So that's what it turned out being. And I'll be honest, really, from my experience looking at it now, from about that mid to late May concept, early May in some regards, I'd say really just a month of May of 2020, it's taken off and it has showed almost very little to no signs of slowing down. That's been a huge advantage to where I am right now. I don't know if you're familiar or not. I heard a couple of weeks ago that NetJets had such an influx in new members that they are so short on pilots and so short on airplanes that they actually decided that they aren't taking any more new members for a while until they can catch up. Because there's so many people jumping onto the 91K into the fractional market, you know, that equivalates for us pilots. That's great news. That equivalates to better job security and long-term job security in the way I interpret it. And wheels up, same thing. They're running into the same issue. You know, a lot of these charter industry guys that I've run into, they're just hiring in droves. And I was telling Gary the other day when I was talking to him on the phone, he was asking me about it. I said, you know, the airlines get all the attention because they're the bigger ones. And I understand that. That's how it goes. You know, the big three dominate the aviation news market. And corporate falls behind, and they don't have a big voice because it's not the big side of the industry. But if you dig deep enough and you look on the internet and you read enough in magazines and things, you'll see the corporate market is just kicking it right now. It's doing a great job. And arguably, you know, where the airlines took a while to rebound, we had already rebounded and we were already above them, you know, doing just as well, if not better.
So do you think like the main reason most like students don't hear about corporate aviation is because they don't have, I don't know how to say, not like the deep pockets, but not the voice that airlines have?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I was telling Gary earlier, I said, I think I look back at my time at UND and the one thing that never was really given an opportunity at any career fair or really at any, you know, guest speaker scenario was a corporate flight department, 91 or charter operators. You never, I can honestly think back to my 4.5 years in Grand Forks. I don't think I ever saw anybody really reach. There might've been a couple like internships that came along, but they were like basically a flyer on the wall and you had to like really go look for them. The military actually had a slighter, in my opinion, more of a slightly bigger edge in the recruiting department even than corporate did. At UND when I was there, and even the military had very little say so in it at all. And I know Gary had been talking to me and he said that was one thing that he had heard from a lot of students that they wanted to change at UND. I really hope UND is able to open that up and to get some of the our corporate pilots alumni, you know, like myself, some other guys I can reach out to or some in their alumni channels that they could bring back and speak to you guys and talk to, you know, y'all about what a wonderful opportunity it is in the corporate side of flying.
Yeah. And I think one of the ones that might be kind of working towards getting a name out there about corporate flying, I hear a lot about NetJets. Do you know anything about NetJets, how they operate and stuff?
Well, NetJets, in the corporate world is probably the equivalent of like Delta Airlines, really. I mean,
yeah,
the 91 fractional side. I mean, they've got a lot of deep pockets. You know, they're owned by Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett's holdings group. So there's a lot of potential there. They've grown so much over the years and they've signed these big deals with Textron, with them providing them Citation Latitudes and Sovereigns and Longitudes. So they're really committed to that line of jets and growth. And I think NetJets is an awesome opportunity. I really do. Gary had mentioned something too about UND in talks with NetJets about something about the possibility of trying to set up a bridge program with them. And I think that would be a huge step in getting students to realize, hey, this is an awesome opportunity to fly some, in my humble opinion, way better looking jets than what the airlines fly.
Yeah, they fly some really, really cool stuff. Are you involved at all, like going to like MBAA stuff, anything like that, or like any corporate kind of, because I know UND we have a career fair tomorrow and it'll probably be your typical Endeavor, SkyWest, Envoy, all that stuff, and there exactly. there might be NetJets, I don't know, but you're not gonna have your mom and pop King Air flying thing. Mm-hmm. Is there, because I know the MBAA does like kind of more corporate business side of aviation. Do you recommend going to things like that?
I strongly recommend it. NBAA, I have been unfortunate so far to not be able to go to an NBAA conference. It's, the companies I've flown for, every flight department I've been a part of, was a member of NBAA, but we were so busy flying during periods of time when they had their conference, I was never able to get out and go to one. But that's certainly on my list, something I certainly want to do. But I know NBAA, I read a lot in their magazines. I read a lot of their online material, and I keep up with them. I highly suggest any students or any CFIs out there that are interested in corporate aviation, you get involved with NBAA because it's a great organization to get you involved in business aviation. There's no doubt about that.
More on like the corporate side of flying, let's say like I'm a new student at UND, what are some like end game things that I should be working towards right now if I am very interested into corporate flying, flying the Ferraris of the world?
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think the biggest thing, like I said earlier, if you run into a scenario where you're kind of like me, say you want to go the military route and then you change your mind and you say, you know, I'm not as big on commercial aviation. I kind of like the UAS concept. I do suggest, because if you're at UND and you have the financial availability to do it, I do suggest you get your CFI. It's a great way to build time and to build that experience. And that time does equivalent to the corporate world. I mean, corporate aviation loves that time. Like I said, I'm kind of an outlier to the rule, really. I'm kind of the redheaded stepchild, for lack of a better term, in that regard.
Yeah.
But I highly suggest, you know, you follow the pillars, probably similar to what you would to go to the airlines. But I think where it's going to differ is when you go to career fairs and things, is try to get in touch with alumni, try to reach out to alumni you see in the corporate industry. If it's something that you're interested in, you got to develop those connections. And like I said, you know, grassroots best way to do that is when you fly and you go to these cross countries and you go in the different FBOs, when you go to Fargo, when you go to Bismarck, Jamestown, even Devil's Lake, Minot, any of those routine cross country spots, Duluth, Minneapolis, St. Cloud, Park Rapids, any of those that we used to go to all the time. When you see a King Air or you see a Citation sitting on the ramp, or if you're at a big enough place and you see a Gulfstream or something, especially a Gulfstream, go talk to those. those are awesome opportunities to lead to where I am now, to work your way up the ladder in the corporate world and develop those connections. I think it's also a good idea. You know, Gary talked about it all the time when I was in school, is to develop a simple business card with your cell phone number, your business, with your cell number and your email address, and give it to them. Just have them ready. You know, this is my card. You know, I'm very interested in flying corporate one day. I'd love to fly possibly for your company and fly this nice Citation, this nice Challenger, this nice Gulfstream that you guys are flying. You know, this is where I am in my career right now. This is where I am at school. That's the best way to bust into the corporate market. It really, really, truly is. And with charter companies, you know, if you see a charter bird or you see a charter operator, like, you know, Wheels Up and NetJets and things like that, you can do that as well. But the great thing about them is, you know, they have recruiters and they have avenues to where they can get you in touch with, and you can start the process way earlier.
Yeah, that's great advice. Do you have like any other like kind of advice for students, like any finishing up advice, like let's say someone going through training right now?
Well, the best advice I can tell you is, you know, there's some out there that probably haven't seen adversity in aviation yet, other than what we've seen in COVID that's affected everybody. But I would say that if you haven't yet, at some point somewhere, your dream job may not come knocking as soon as you thought it would. You may not get the opportunity up front initially that you really wanted. But I am living proof that you can make it happen. You can go different avenues. You can find things that interest you, and you can make a great career out of it. And you're at the best school, literally the best school in the country to develop your career and to go anywhere you want to go. My biggest suggestion to students is, just don't give up. If the passion is to fly, be dedicated to it and keep flying and don't give up. Don't let anybody tell you can't do it. Don't let anybody tell you that you're not good enough. Break down the doors, break down the walls, punch through it, and persevere. And that's the key I can.
Just keep flying.
Just keep it going. That's the biggest thing I should say, is just to keep flying.
Just keep your head down, keep trucking. But hey, Chatham, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Abe. Wow, there's some good stuff we talked about. Thank you so much.
Yeah, guys, thanks. That was awesome.
It's a pleasure, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And anytime you want me to come back, I'd love to come back and talk to you guys some more. We can just chit chat about flying if you want to. I'm always game for that.
Hell yeah, I'm totally down. Thanks. Thanks, Chatham.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast.
If you have any questions for us, DM us on Instagram @vertical_guidance.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.